Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Governor Tom Wolf has proposed a 2019-2020 fiscal year budget that calls for spending of $34.1 billion, which is about a 4 to 6% increase over the current fiscal year, but doesn't include a general fund tax increase. In making his budget address to a joint session of the legislature Tuesday, the governor provided a broad vision of his priorities for Pennsylvania without getting into many specifics during the speech itself. That broad vision focused heavily on education and workforce development. To analyze what the governor had to say and his priorities, joining us is Dr. G. Terry Madonna, professor of public affairs and director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs, and a political analyst and pollster at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster. Dr. Madonna, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, as always.
All right, so the broad question, your takeaway from the governor's budget address.
Well, let's start with the tone and tenor. I mean, it was what I call a reconciliation speech. I don't think it was very challenging. I don't think the governor, you know, approached this in any controversial manner at all. I think, as you know, and many of your listeners know, the governor is very tends to be soft-spoken, tends to choose his words very carefully, tends to be not very controversial in the way in which he expresses himself. There's no bombast in the governor's efforts to reach people, and it's amazing how he does that. I thought overall, in terms of its tone and its tenor, it was what I call a reconciliation talk. He reached out to the Republicans as well as to members of his own party and left out a lot of the specifics, but they're all available. I mean, the lawmakers can easily find, as you accurately point out, what the total proposal is, about a 4.3% increase. Some have made it a higher percentage increase based on some other factors in the budget. But overall, I thought the tone and the tenor was very good. I thought the governor reached out, build bridges, reconcile differences, and I thought overall the approach was quite good.
Think back 4 years, the governor's first budget address, which the governor made a lot of. Well, they were controversial at the time,
yeah.
And they were cutting edge for Pennsylvania at the time, included tax increases. And as a result, Republicans in the legislature, which held a majority as they do today,
right,
did not accept it very well. It took 9 months to get that
That's
budget
exactly
enacted,
right.
A record here in Pennsylvania.
And he didn't sign it.
That's right. It became law without the governor signing
good
it.
Good point. In fact, three of them did.
That's
three
right.
Three of the four did.
But compare that to what we have today, and it is night and day.
Oh, I couldn't. And how about this, comparing it to the federal government, which I think by implication the governor made that allusion in his speech when he talked about we do things differently in Pennsylvania. And he's always back to the great experiment, William Penn, and how people have, you know, got along and we have to get along. And so I do think his approach, you can disagree with him on the issues, no doubt about it. But here's the point. You can disagree with Governor Wolf all day if you want. But you know what? It's hard to dislike him. I mean, just in terms of his the congenial nature and his personality, I joked and say he sounds like a college professor giving a lecture, but I won't pursue that very far, Scott.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of the governor's speech where he touched on some of the priorities that he's looking for in this fiscal year, but he also discusses what you just mentioned and makes the comparison between Harrisburg and Washington.
It makes investments in workforce readiness, in our early childhood system, our schools, our universities, our community colleges, our apprenticeship training programs. It makes investments in ensuring that Pennsylvanians of all ages have real choices when it comes to their health care. It continues to prioritize the fight against the opioid epidemic that has destroyed the lives of so many of our friends and neighbors. But above all else, this budget proclaims to the world that right here in Pennsylvania, we do not indulge in the sterile politics of anger and insult. That here we know how to engage in the respectful and honest give and take that must stand at the heart of a functional democracy. While the rest of this country, and indeed the rest of the world, descends into divisive, nasty, and unproductive bouts of shouting, we're showing everyone else, right here in the heart of democracy, how democracy is supposed to work.
That 60-second clip may have said it all, in that he talked about the broad proposals that he's looking for, priorities, but at the same time, comparing Pennsylvania and a spirit of cooperation with what doesn't exist in Washington.
Oh, I think that clip says it all. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, it does lay down the parameters of where he wants to take the state. And I thought that the two foci of the speech was, number one, workforce development, and we can chat about that. Workforce development, extremely important, and then education, which has been, for his entire tenure, I think, the number one policy agenda. The first term, 4 years, 17% increase in education. And again, as we approach the new fiscal year, July 1, this summer, education, again, I think, is the number one priority. Now, he does have something that he calls the Keystone Economic Development and Workforce Command Center. That's quite a mouthful. The command center, in which his agency heads. But guess who else is going to be a part of that? The head of the Pennsylvania Chamber of Commerce, Gene Barr, and a major union leader, Rick Bloomingdale. So you see what he's doing. He's trying to put all the pieces together. Workforce and jobs, major thrust, education second. Now, there are other important things like the opioid battle, you know, and there are other things we can talk about. But I think that says it all.
When you look at this budget, I mean, we don't want to make it sound like everyone is agreeing on everything, that is far from the case. But what wasn't included in the budget address, or really as part of the governor's budget proposal, are two areas where there may be the most disagreement. Let's start with minimum wage, for one. It was not part of Governor Wolf's budget address because it's not part of the budget.
Yeah.
But the governor is calling for an increase in the minimum wage of $7.25, which it currently is and has been for the last 10 years, to $12 an hour by July 1st of this year, going up by 50 cents an hour over the next 6 years to the year 2025.
That's right.
This is an area where, even though it's not budget related, this is an area where he is going to get some pushback from Republicans.
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt about it. Remember, this isn't a new proposal.
No.
He's been at this for 4 years. And the bottom line here is that I think it's doubtful that the Republican-controlled legislature, and let's point this out, as a result of the election last November, the Republicans did lose seats in the House and the Senate, but they still control both chambers. And I'm going to use this term descriptively, not pejoratively. The legislature is now more conservative. The Republicans in the legislature are now more conservative because the moderates in the House and the Senate, Republican moderates, overall lost. Now, I'm not saying there isn't any moderates left, but their numbers have been diminished significantly in the House and the Senate. So I think that's not likely to – the minimum wage hike is not likely to occur. And by the way, he does put into this budget savings because people will earn more and require less public assistance and other programs to help reach this 4.3 to 6% hike. You get it. So if he's going to spend the kind of money, there's a variety of ways in which he hopes to make the money to pay for the budget, I'll put it bluntly, to come up with the revenue to pay for the budget. And he has to do that without no sales tax call, no income tax haul. Two of the four budgets that he proposed earlier, they were a big part of it. He didn't have it in his last two budgets. And it wasn't obviously part of the deal that they worked out, Republicans and the Democrats and Governor Wolf, in the current fiscal year budget.
I noticed property taxes was not mentioned in that speech as well.
The most hated tax by the voters in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is the school property tax.
Yeah, it was not mentioned in the speech, and I don't really see a whole lot even in the numbers about it, because what reminded me of that was when you were talking about an increase in the sales tax or other taxes to make up for that loss in property tax. So maybe that's an issue. We know it's going to come up, but it's not part of the budget here.
That's correct.
But getting back to the minimum wage increase, of course, the argument against the minimum wage increase is that it will cost businesses, which in turn will cost jobs. The independent fiscal office in Pennsylvania estimated it would cost 33,000 jobs here in Pennsylvania. As you mentioned, the governor is counting on that increase in wages, which will in turn go toward an increase in spending and more sales taxes coming in, saving money on people not using as many government services. But businesses are going to dig in on raising the minimum wage, states around us have done it.
Every state around us, and something like 29 states have adopted an increase in their minimum wage since 2009. I think 20 of the 29 are going into effect this year. And all the now, here's something that I thought about. I mean, maybe I don't know if the Republicans would agree to this and the business community, but okay, maybe not $12 an hour. Not all of the states have $12 an hour.
No, then there's one that's like $8.25.
Yeah,
something
I mean,
like
you could do $10 something, $10.25. I'm merely pointing out that if you're looking for a compromise, maybe you go to something less than $12 an hour, but do increase it. And of course, folks in the labor community and a lot of educators are arguing that that's necessary because of the poverty level and the fact that many people who earn minimum wage are literally in poverty situations. So you have both sides, as you pointed out, what the Independent Fiscal Commission and business leaders say, and then you have the other side that says, well, we have to do something to lift people out of poverty.
Well, and it's been 10 years, too. I mean, that's what a lot of people who are proponents would say.
Correct.
You know, $7.25 in 2008 is not $7.25 in 2019, that's for sure.
That's correct.
The other area where there could be some negotiating on, and I probably would have Republicans say this is a non-starter. In fact, I think they did when the governor proposes a few weeks ago. And what he is doing is proposing to impose a tax, a severance tax, on natural gas drillers, which he's done every year in office. But this time, it's a little bit different. The money would go toward paying down bonds, money that would be borrowed, that would go toward construction projects for infrastructure. Now, Terry, you know, I think Republicans and Democrats would both agree this state has just some incredible infrastructure needs.
Oh, yeah. And remember, roads and bridges are now being financed billions of dollars since it was enacted, what, 6 or 7 years ago when we increased the tax on gasoline so that when you go to the pump now and you pay $2.35, $2.45 per gallon, it's much higher than many other states.
Oh, I think it's the highest in the country.
But what's the money going for? To improve roads and bridges, which desperately are needed. All the folks in our state, in the polls that we have done, by the way, support the severance tax. That's point number one. Point number two, they do support, by the way, the money going to roads and bridges. But as you accurately point out, this is not the first time the governor has proposed this, and the legislature has refused to adopt it, and I suspect that's a non-starter. That's a non-starter as well. You might have a better chance if, in fact, the state had a $2 billion deficit, and that was one way to deal with outcutting state services to fund the budget. But now that the revenues are up a bit, and that there's no tax hike, broad-based tax hike in the current budget proposal by the governor, you got to wonder, well, why would this be done? You see where I'm heading with this, with no emergency. So it's not like, and you still have the impact fee.
And that's another argument.
Another tax, you know, that's the other argument that opponents use. We have an impact fee. That's a fee on each well. The severance tax is a tax on the amount of cubic feet extracted from each well. And I think one point I read is that it's somewhere around 4.5% tax, if you will, severance tax.
But why is this not? There may be some asking, why this wasn't included as part of the governor's budget address.
I can't. Maybe because he knew it was just another focal point, another point that in which would give his critics something to argue about. Here's something else. I read the speech. I didn't see anything about gun control.
No mention of it. Now, there was about criminal justice reform.
That's correct. And particularly about what happens with people, and they've already done this, if you go for a certain period of time, I think it's 10 years, and you have you're out in the community, you've not had any incidents involving the law, why should you have that record which keeps you from finding employment?
Right, the clean slate law.
The clean slate law, and that's very popular, and I thought that was passed in a bipartisan fashion. So you're exactly right about that. No mention of guns, but the governor has made a pretty big deal of that. Now, again, that's not necessarily have to be part of the budget. That doesn't mean that the governor and his supporters could urge the passage of gun control measures independent from the actual budget message because of, doesn't have the fiscal implication that these other, education, healthcare, and other kinds of spending have. So that's the reason it was probably kept out. It's also controversial, right?
Right. Well, the history of this state as well as anyone. And there used to be a State of the State address
right.
by the governor and a separate budget address.
But
now they've morphed into one. Yep. And the governor's budget address, one of the reasons that it is looked forward to by so many is that it actually shows what the governor's priorities are and
that's
acts
right.
as a State of the State address.
Yeah, but there are differences, as you've pointed out, in the sense that you've sat down and read it and studied it, and you say, well, this isn't in the budget, yet it's a priority. I'll put it another way. The State of the State's the equivalent of the State of the Union, which the president just delivered. Bottom line, it's the governor can still hold speeches. He can still issue, press releases. He can still travel about the state pushing an agenda for the severance tax, pushing an agenda for gun control. And I would be stunned if he did not do that. And I think you would be, too.
We're going to be speaking with WITF's Capitol Bureau Chief Katie Meyer in just a moment, who also covered Governor Wolf's budget address. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about Governor Wolf's 2019-2020 proposed budget, the budget address that he made on Tuesday that would increase spending by at least 4% to $34.1 billion. But as the governor was quick to point out, it does not call for any general tax increases. We're joined by pollster and political analyst Dr. G. Terry Madonna of Franklin and Marshall College. Now joining us is WITF's Capitol Bureau Chief Katie Meyer. Katie, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So your overall takeaway from the governor's address.
So I think this is clearly, but as we saw in previous years, a departure from Wolf's first few budgets where he proposed these sweeping tax increases and got, very little buy-in from Republicans, and that kicked off some really significant impasses. We're not seeing that in this case. As you mentioned, there's no tax increases in this budget. But there are a few things that I think are going to be questionable for Republicans. But starting off with the good stuff, we did hear from GOP leaders in the House and the Senate, and, they did say this is going to be a little bit smoother sailing than maybe we've seen before. They weren't making really too many guarantees in that area. But they said there's a lot, essentially, that they can work with. Now, a few things that they can't quite work with, I think, was just the overall spend. This was a roughly $1 billion increase over last year's enacted budget. And so what that means is, new spending. So where Wolf wants to pull that money is from some debt service, from changes in how we, manage human relations or human services spending. And Republicans basically said, that's still too much. We don't want to spend that much. So Pat Brown, who's the Senate Appropriations Chair, kind of says that the most clearly, I think, saying that it's just not sustainable, that level of spending. So going to be some questions about the overall spend, but you know, I think broad strokes, there's a lot of places where these guys agree right now.
You know, as someone who has covered a lot of these budget addresses over the years, I have to say that I don't remember one that struck this tone, at least between the governor of one party, the legislature and majority of another, that seemed like there were a lot of areas where the two parties could agree on a lot of things.
I mean, I think there are definitely growing areas of bipartisan consensus. For instance, you did hear them mention criminal justice reform. That's something Republicans have increasingly gotten behind in recent years, trying to reduce prison costs and keep more people out of prison. So that's always something. There's not a huge fiscal impact of that as far as I've seen this year. But then, again, I do want to stress, Scott, there are some relatively fundamental areas, I guess, where they disagree. But let me first say, the other thing, I think Wolf's main through line in this speech was workforce development, you know, support for people who maybe aren't able to get jobs, people in the trades, things like that. And that's obviously something that Republicans also support, is, you know, job development. Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side of that, Wolf wants to increase the minimum wage. And that is something that he included in his budget proposal. He wants to have money banked for that. So, you know, I think there's still going to be some negotiation.
Mm-hmm. Terry, what would you want to add?
I have a question. Obviously, he didn't stress the minimum wage in his address, but when you get into the actual budget recommendations, he puts it in, and it's the same plan he has had for some time. But the one thing that struck me was how he went out of his way to stress, in terms of new jobs and finding and employment for people, branching out into new areas of employment, the Keystone Economic Development and Workforce, I love this, command center of all, where he has Gene Barr from the PA Chamber and Rick Bloomendale, a union major union leader in the state, as participants in that. And to go back to Scott's point about how this, the tone and the tenor, as and you pointed this out, very different from the first two, particularly the first two addresses, but this one had major areas where you would think there would be bipartisanship, or am I wrong about that?
I think you're absolutely right. I think, for instance, that task force, or what are they calling it, the command center. That
command center.
Planning.
I love that expression.
Yeah,
word.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how that comes together, but I didn't see any opposition, obviously, to it from Republicans. So that's going to be something to watch, for sure.
Katie Myers, WITF's Capital Bureau Chief. Katie, thank you very much for coming on and talking with us today.
Thanks, Scott.
Terry, let's get into some of the workforce information or some of the proposals that the governor had. And this is one of the things that he used examples during his budget address to point out why this is so important to Pennsylvania's future.
When Amazon made its decision to locate its second headquarters somewhere other than Pennsylvania, it cited workforce concerns as a main reason. And in Western Pennsylvania, we struggled to find Pennsylvanians to fill the jobs as welders and pipe fitters at the Shell cracker plant. Across the Commonwealth, we have workers aging out of our workforce. Mm-hmm. And too often, the next generation of workers is simply not there or doesn't have the skills to replace them. If we can't strengthen our workforce, we're going to fall behind.
So that's why a lot of this focused on workforce development, and by that he had some specific plan. You've talked about this command center that he's talking about, but there are some other things there in mind.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, imagine an increase. He has recommended a 9.6% increase, 10 million more for high school and post-secondary educations to deal with and to train that specialize in technical and trade skills. The total now, bring up the total to 104.6 million. That's just one area where there obviously the business and the labor community can come together. Another proposal is 5 million for job training programs, job training program run by the Department of Community and Economic Development, and then $12 million grant program to help business deal with what the governor calls employability skills gap and increase recruitment return on investment. So you get the point. I think he wants the business and labor community to get together and to work. That's the command center. To identify areas in particular that need, you know, where we can produce workers for certain skills, certain technical areas of the economy, things that we're lagging behind, and that he's put his money where his mouth is, so to speak, by making these recommendations to the legislature for increased spending in the areas of state government that also can provide some assistance. So I think that's been a major focus of this speech. And I think that's one area, and I'm not suggesting they'll adopt the specific amounts of money that he's recommended, but what I was glad to see was to get the labor and business communities to work together to try to deal with this skills gap.
Well, and that's an area where I don't think there would be any real disagreement, because I remember Brian Cutler, who was the new majority leader in the House from Lancaster County, when he first became the majority leader and appeared on our program, he talked about this as one of his priorities is developing more skilled workers, that he was hearing that from throughout the state. I've heard it for the last 2 or 3 years. I'm sure you have too.
Yeah.
That we have employers who have jobs, good wage jobs, who cannot fill those positions because they don't have the skilled workers. I thought the governor made a real good point with the examples he gave. I mean, Amazon coming here for a second headquarters would have been huge as far as the number of jobs, the kinds of jobs that were created. But when Amazon says, we just don't think you have a skilled enough workforce, that's big.
That says it all.
And this cracker plant, I heard Republicans afterwards talk about how great of a facility this is for creating jobs in Pennsylvania.
And the governor
future.
Supports that, by the way.
Well, both of them do. Both parties
do. That's what I mean. Yeah.
But skilled workers, the governor said in the speech, we're having trouble finding welders.
Yeah.
So this will be a priority.
Here's one of the problems. We got an aging population in this state. When you look at the out-migration of people, by demographic group, the largest group of people leaving the state are millennials. So in other words, they graduate from high school, they go out of the state to receive their schooling, they don't come back, and or they're in the state and they leave. Why? Because of jobs that are elsewhere. And as you accurately point out, we have businesses that are looking desperately for people in a number of these skilled trade areas. And what I think the governor and Republicans are trying to do is to address that. And I was, of all the things in the speech that I think represented reaching out across the aisle, that would be, in my humble judgment, the most important thing in this speech.
Well, and another part of that involved community colleges. And I'm going to read right from the governor's script. He says he has a plan that would create a new grant program for students who graduate from Pennsylvania Community College with an associate's degree or other industry-recognized credential and then stay in Pennsylvania to start their careers. And then he also goes on to say, as part of that, if you're a parent who wants to trade up for a job that pays the bills to a job that can sustain your family, my plan includes a parent pathway initiative designed to help you get the education you need to get ahead even while you prepare your kids for success. I mean, there's an incentive if you're – now, we're talking about associate's degree, but nowadays with community colleges and these jobs –
vocational and technical
that's
schools.
That's right.
Throw them in.
That, you know, here's incentive, maybe better jobs. You get the training. And then incentive to stay in Pennsylvania because there's a grant involved.
No, you're exactly right. And I think both sides now recognize that. And certainly people in the education community do. Now, one of the things about our state is we have depth and breadth in terms of our higher education so that we can fit into the parameters of that, the kinds of programs that the governor is talking about and Republicans have talked about, and merge them into the education system. So it's not one size fits all. There are many, many sizes out there that will work in workforce development. And I think, in terms of creating jobs, this is innovative, and I think it's important.
Well, education, workforce development were two yep. of the keys to the governor's speech with his priorities. As you mentioned earlier in the program, public school education was the issue yep. for Governor Tom Wolf when he was candidate Tom Wolf the first time. Probably one of the reasons that Tom Corbett, the incumbent governor, previous incumbent yeah, governor, lost is
trouble.
There was $1 billion cut in education funding. Now, of course, there was the argument that that was money that came from the federal government, a one-time deal, and that Republicans say wasn't really a cut. Bottom right. line was Tom Wolf ran saying this money must be replaced.
And he's continued to push that agenda into his second term. Right?
And right. And even today, he... To a degree, credited the legislature with partnering with him.
Well, they did.
Well, they did. Well, they had to approve the money, right?
Yeah, and I think it was over the 4 years a 17% hike in for the public schools, public yeah. school education.
But it did bring back that $1 billion. But the governor is continuing to ask for yep. more money for basic education, $13.7 billion total. It's a 3.3% increase, $200 million more for the state's per pupil subsidy. That includes a $13.8 million earmark to raise teacher salaries in some urban and rural districts where the pay right. is low. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. $50 million for special education, $50 million more for preschool programs, a total of nearly $301 million there. Mandating a study on statewide full day university kindergarten, which seemed to be very popular with the legislators hearing this speech. Both sides of the aisle mm-hmm. applauded mm-hmm. on that one. Mm-hmm. So those are some things. Before we get into the minimum wage for teachers, I don't know if I'd say minimum wage, but the minimum salary.
The minimum salary,
right.
That's close.
But the governor continues to ask for more money for education.
Well, I think it's obvious that if you have, and you talk to a college professor about this, I'm biased, what can I tell you? You know what I'm going to say. I mean, I think the more education you have, particularly in relevant areas that supply jobs. Now, I'm at a professor at a liberal arts school, and I know that if you have a liberal arts degree, it means you're flexible. It means you can go a whole variety of ways, which we talk about a lot. But that doesn't mean that there aren't needs that special parts of our state have, such as rural and urban communities especially. And they're different. They have different needs and different requirements. And what the governor is doing here is proposing an increase in the support for those people. And one of the things I think that he's done that are pretty important are preschool. You know, we can argue about how early it is that kids should get started in school, but this whole point about lowering the age for when kids start school.
To six.
To six, yeah. I mean, and then what you didn't mention this, and I will, is lowering the compulsory. Yeah, you mentioned that, but you didn't mention the dropout
right.
side of it.
Right.
You can, you're moving that from 17 to 18 to try to keep kids in school. Now, not everybody, you know, that shouldn't apply. I understand that to everybody. But I think overall, it's the soundness of the approach that we're talking about. And again, some might argue about the amounts of money here, the amounts. But I don't think anybody can argue about the thrust of it. And that's what I think is good about the budget message itself, is he's laid out a parameter for success. Disagree with the money here and there, and that's fine. Maybe one aspect of the program as opposed to another. But the overall tenor and approach seems to me to be pretty good. And he's leaving a significant role, as we talked about earlier, for the private sector. The government can't do this all.
He talked about, I mean, there were times where I thought this could be coming from a Republican.
A Republican, yeah.
Yeah, I heard private-public partnerships.
Yeah.
But one of the big parts of what the governor did propose was increasing the minimum salary for teachers. Let's listen.
But the law governing teacher pay actually hasn't been updated in Pennsylvania since the 1980s. And so our classroom teachers have too often been getting the short end of the stick. I don't think anyone here in Harrisburg would say that we shouldn't value the contributions our educators have made over the last 30 years. And I don't think anyone would disagree that they have a critical role to play in securing our prosperity in the next 30. And yet, our government has failed to address this injustice.
Yeah.
That has to end now. My plan increases the pay floor for teachers to $45,000 a year.
I'll bet there's a lot of people who didn't realize that those 1980 laws still don't exist.
Right.
Now, I don't know whether there are teachers out there that were making $18,000 a year, but minimum salary of $45,000.
Yeah. How can you ask a college professor what a teacher should be paid? You know what I'm going to say. I can't help that for obvious reasons. And I do think that part of it, as important as the proposal is to be considered, and I think it should be considered, I think the Republicans may balk at that one. Compelling it, not letting the school districts and the unions negotiate that. Again, I think that's of the areas in the budget that we talked about there where there was a lot of agreement. I think that's one area where I would be stunned if they approved that, by the way. If the legislature adopted that.
Stunned. You'll go as far as being stunned.
Stunned if they would approve it. Now, again, you can imagine how I feel about it, given what I do for a living. But that's to be expected.
There's a lot more to talk about. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. By the way, coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about a series that was in the Carlisle Sentinel having to do with what happens with juveniles charged with a crime as adults. And that's something that you don't hear a whole lot about. Often you will hear about a juvenile charged with an adult crime, but don't hear about what happens afterwards. That's coming up on tomorrow's program. For today, we're talking about Governor Tom Wolf's 2019-2020 fiscal year budget proposal, spending $34.1 billion. Joining us is Dr. G. Terry Madonna, professor of public affairs and director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs. He's a political analyst and pollster at Franklin and Marshall College. Terry, just one more thing on public education. The governor is, once again, asking for an increase in spending on education. But there have been a lot of people who have pointed out over the past 4 years when there has been that $1 billion increase in spending that much of it is going to pay
pension
off pensions.
Cost, that's
not pay it off, but to pay down the debt for pensions for retired public educators and state employees. Well, the part that goes to education doesn't go for state employees.
Right.
But
right.
Bottom line is pensions.
Correct.
There's a formula now they've come up with that will affect future employees, but the state still has a $70 billion debt.
And there's three new pension options that people can pick. And school districts in particular have been complaining about the increasing cost to them. Here's why. Because they've had to reduce programs, they've had to cut services, staffing levels, and also to raise a tax that you and I talked about. Part of the raises in the property tax have been to fund the pension system. And so it's up to the state. And I think what the governor is suggesting is pay down some of that cost that, you know, it's not going to be done overnight, but that has to be done. The problem, if it is, it's a state program. The burden falls on the school districts. They then have to raise the most unpopular tax to fund it. So I don't think there's any doubt about that that's going to be another one of the thorny issues that Republicans and Democrats are going to have to agree upon what to do about that, the underfunding of the pension systems.
Let's move on to higher education.
Right.
Pennsylvania's state-owned and state-related universities took a real budget hit 5 years ago, six years ago during the Corbett administration. I don't know whether they've actually caught up now to the levels of funding that they were cut to 6 or 7 years ago.
I think the answer to that is no. And the governor this year, as you well know, is recommending an increase, but it's not a huge increase. Let's talk about the state-owned universities, the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. That would be I have to mention Millersville, my former employee. Millersville, Shippensburg, Kutztown, you know, Cheney, the remainder of the 14. The bottom line there is the governor's recommending $7 million for a total of $475 million, and it's a smaller increase, 1.5%. So I think there'll be some disappointment in the public
university. Oh, I think university. There'll be a lot. Yeah. I mean, they were asking for $38 million
yeah.
and only getting $7 million. We had the new chancellor of the state system of higher education on the program a few weeks ago where they are in a bad situation right now. Declining enrollment. Millersville and Westchester, the only two schools that had an increase in enrollment. Declining enrollments. And
they're often the largest employer in these regions. Stable employment historically for people in many rural areas of the state. And they're the centerpiece. And, you know, the cuts in the funding are obviously very, very damaging. And we'll see what happens. The legislature hasn't shown much interest to increase that. You know what I mean? Here's one area where I'm sure the public higher education folks are going to be working very hard to try to increase that.
That's the state-owned universities, the state-related universities like Penn State, Temple, Pitt, and Lincoln. No increase, that their budget, the money coming from the state would stay flat.
Flat.
So that's not good news for them.
No, and they're pretty powerful when you talk about in the legislature, Penn State, Temple, University of Pittsburgh, Lincoln. I mean, these are schools that, you know, have a lot of, historically have had a lot of clout in the legislature. But again, no increase in funding. I'm sure there's going to be deep concern about that. And we'll have to see how that all plays out. But over last year, the same recommendation, right? And what happened? No increase. So we'll have to see how that all works out.
Well, we bring that up because those universities would say that they have very few options. And that raising tuition would be. That's the point I wanted to make.
Yep. And the higher the tuitions get, the more of a deterrent it is for people to go to these schools. And secondly, it also leads to increasing student debt, which is a growing and it's been growing and it's a very serious problem that young people face when they start their careers with literally thousands and thousands of dollars, in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, depending on what schools are going and what the tuitions are.
Hitting on a few other issues here, election security is one. The governor, what did he propose?
Well, he proposed $15 million to help counties pay for new voting machines and $2 million to upgrade statewide voter registration systems. The problem with many of the machines in the state, without getting technical, is that there's no paper trail. And so if you worry about, and what did we hear in the 2016 election, the Russians hacking, others hacking into our political system and into the machines. And so modernizing that equipment is very important. That's also an area, Scott, where we're going to get I think that's bipartisan. I can't believe that they're, again, arguing about how much money should go into it. But overall, I think that's something primarily that the state should function, even though, you know, you go into a voting booth in your municipality, it's local elected officials who run it. You have county boards of elections, right? But I still think that money, we ought to have a state system using machines adopted by the state as we do with what, and in the end, what should it be? The state primarily paying for it because it's a statewide system.
Well, and the reality is right now is that there is a court order that requires Pennsylvania to upgrade its voting systems.
Exactly.
And much of that will fall on the counties. The state is throwing in some money, but
I'm for the state throwing in more money, to be honest with you, simply because it needs to be done. And some counties are not in a good position, fiscal position, to do that. And I think that's, I still ultimately think that's a state responsibility.
Well, right now, as it stands, the federal government is putting in a portion of it. It's going to cost $150
million
for the upgrade.
Right.
The feds are putting in some, states putting in some, there are a lot of counties, 67 counties across the state, and most of them are wondering where is that money going to come from so that we don't have to increase our property taxes.
Right.
Moving on to another issue. Earlier, you mentioned the transportation plan of a few years ago that came during the Corbett administration that increased the taxes on gasoline.
On gasoline, right.
That money was supposed to go for road, bridge construction, repairs, maintenance, that kind of thing. Much of it has. But a lot of it has gone towards state police coverage in rural areas of the state, municipalities that don't have their own police departments. State police patrol those areas. And, you know, those who say that it's time that those residents kick in some money would say they've been getting it for free. Well, what they point out is, hey, we're Pennsylvania taxpayers too, so we're funding the state police. But the governor does have a plan here. A few years ago, he proposed $25 fee per person. Some of the smaller, poorer municipalities said, hey, we can't do that. That's a tax on us.
Right.
But what he does here is he has kind of a sliding scale dependent on population.
Population, yeah. I don't know. I mean, first of all, look, we all agree that the state police need to be financed and funded properly. That's not an issue. The question is, why can't they, why should we divert money? I don't care where they're diverting it from programs that were passed by the legislature to accomplish one end. Why is the money diverted and not spent on the purpose the legislature enacted it for? In this case, roads and bridge repairs, upgrades. And the state, it's state police, state police. Again, I'm back to this argument that I think it's primarily a state function. And there are some municipalities that don't have the resources because many of them are in rural areas, large geographic areas, small towns inundate them. I still think it's primarily a state responsibility. And again, the governor is trying this sliding scale to help out a bit, but I don't know that it's going to solve, it's not going to solve the problem. And then if you're in a municipality in which you're paying for the state police and down the road's another municipality that isn't, you can see how the, and understandably they feel, well, we're being taken advantage of. And as you accurately point out in this, in the municipalities that don't have the resources, they're saying, well, now, You're basically telling us we're going to have to pay a tax to do that. You're exactly right.
And paying two taxes.
And paying two taxes, yeah. So the bottom, the point here is that there needs to be a systemic approach to this. A systemic approach to this that is fair without taking money out of one area in which the legislature said use it for this and then use it for another. Now, I know the legislature, when they adopt the budget, you know, in a sense is saying, okay. But that's not doesn't seem to me the way to do this.
A couple other things. One thing that I – and this relates to education, kind of jumping around here. Libraries in Pennsylvania, is funding is flat at $54.5 million. It was in 2001, $75 million.
Correct.
I don't know. It kind of leads you to believe that the state doesn't value libraries as much as what they should.
Well, I'm again, as a college professor, I value libraries a lot. But you know what's increasingly going on is people can get information through various forms of the social media, meaning, you know, going into the libraries, blah, blah, doing the foot traffic in. You get my point. And so, but again, that's another thing that needs some comprehensive evaluation to see exactly where we stand and how much money should be put into libraries. I still think they're critically important and obviously need to be funded.
Just a quick note, there are so many things we could add to this, but the Department of Human Services, governor's asking for a $400 million increase, $15 million for programs for people with intellectual disabilities. Terry, we're almost out of time. So now comes the hard part. The governor has basically laid out a blueprint for his priorities. The legislature may look at it and say, you know what, we don't want to do any of that. I don't think that's going to happen this case.
But what
happens next?
I think there's a good chance they get this done on time by June 30. Now, there's no election coming up this year for lawmakers, so it could be late. And nobody gets nervous about a month or two as long as people are not out of work and, you know, the programs are being funded. I think this is a budget that should achieve consensus fairly quickly. There are parts of it, as we've pointed out, that Republicans are not likely to buy into. But overall, I think this is a much tamer, less controversial budget that the legislature should be able to adopt by June 30.
I'm sure the governor would love to hear the description of his budget as tame. So, Dr. G. Terry Madonna, Franklin and Marshall Couch, thank you very much for being with us today.